Better Leaders, Better Schools, episode number 27.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
My seventh grade English teacher can't transform the school tomorrow. That's bigger than she is. That's bigger than he is. But those two people can innovate tomorrow. And I just thought that was a subtle but important distinction. We can all innovate tomorrow. And I think as leaders, we sometimes use those two words interchangeably. I know that I always did until I read that book. And I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. I think there's a difference between innovating and transforming. Transforming is systemic, it's cultural, it's district-wide. And innovation can happen in a single classroom or in a single school or in a single leadership role.
Hey, this is Daniel Bauer from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I help school leaders create a winning culture, focus on the essential, and lead with courage and integrity. The blog and podcast was made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Get more content and resources at betterleadersbetterschools.com. Better Leaders, are you looking to upgrade your leadership potential? I have another free gift for you. This one is a PDF, which I call 15 questions guaranteed to unlock your leadership potential. Unlock your leadership potential now for free by texting unlock now. That's all one word, no spaces, to 33444. Text unlock now to 33444 for your free gift. 15 questions guaranteed to unlock your leadership potential. Better leaders, I need your help. I invest time, creativity, and money to bring you the blog and podcast whose sole purpose is to develop your leadership capacity. I'm asking you to take a more active role in the show. Will you become a sponsor and help me cover the cost of creating, producing, and hosting the blog and podcast? In the show notes, there is a link where it asks you to become a patron of the show. I'm asking you to donate anywhere between $1 to $5 a month to help offset the cost of creating, producing, and publishing Better Leaders, Better Schools. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. If you have gotten any type of value from this show and would like to invest in Better Leaders, Better Schools, then please click the Patreon link. If you can't financially support the show at this time, then please consider leaving a rating and review, which helps the podcast reach more listeners. Today's podcast is brought to you by Reclaiming the Classroom, a new book by Trenton Goebel. He argues that effective learning happens because of the relationship built between a teacher and a student, not due to government mandates and high-stakes testing. That's a fresh perspective, and I tell you, you need to check out this new book at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. And now it's time for some five-star reviews. P. Maskell writes, great find. As an entrepreneur that works with education leaders on a daily basis, I'm so glad I found this podcast. Daniel brings a very pressing need to the forefront with a great show. P. Maskell, thanks for the rating and review. I'm excited to bring you this episode with Jeff Zoell. He is a great leader in education. He's also speaking at the What Great Educators Do Differently conference this spring. You can check it out, wgedd.com. In this episode, some of the highlights that I like are the disconnection and lack of inspiration that motivated Jeff to make an impact, why he uses the phrase work hard, have fun, be nice, the problem with jumping to conclusions, and the power in pitfalls of actually listening. So you're really going to enjoy this show, and here is Jeff's bio. Dr. Jeffrey Zoell is a lifelong teacher, learner, and leader currently serving as Assistant Superintendent for Teaching and Learning with Deerfield Public Schools District 109 in Deerfield, Illinois. Prior to working in this capacity, Jeff served as a district administrator in Rock Island, Illinois, and a school improvement specialist with Southern Regional Education Board, the nation's largest and oldest nonprofit school improvement network. Jeff also served as a principal with Forsyth County Schools in Cumming, Georgia, and with the North Shore School District 112 in Highland Park, Illinois. Zoell has also taught grad courses at the university level. Before working as an administrator, Jeff taught for 18 years at the elementary, middle, and high school levels and enjoyed coaching a variety of sports. Jeff is the author of several books, including Improving Your School 1 Week at a Time and co-author of What Connected Educators Do Differently. In addition, Zoell enjoys sharing his thoughts about a wide range of educational topics through his blog, Teach, Learn, Lead, Repeat. His blog and the books, guys, will be linked up in the show notes for you. Please enjoy this episode. Ladies and gents, may I introduce to you Jeff Zoll.
Daniel, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to dialogue with you about leadership and school issues. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, Jeff. You know, I'm a big fan. I follow you on Twitter and just love the insights that you share there, your positivity, same thing that I find on your blog. So it was really an honor to have this opportunity to chat with you. Thank you.
Well, that's so nice. It's an honor to be here. Thanks again.
Jeff, can you tell the audience a little bit what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
You know, I know a couple of people who sort of give the answer that I give, but it's in the minority. It's not the typical one. But I do know a few people now over the years who have said this too. Honestly, Daniel, one reason I went into education is not really a pleasant one or an inspiring one. I went into it because I went through my K-12 career, and you could throw my undergrad career on there too, and I wasn't really inspired by many of the teachers I had. That's not to say that they were bad people. They were all good people, and I'm sure they all worked very hard. But I never really felt all that connected to my teachers. There were exceptions, of course, and those exceptions motivated me to pursue that path. But I think primarily I went into education because I thought I could do a good job. I thought I could inspire kids more than I was being inspired. I thought I could connect with kids, and I just really, really wanted to make school fun. I think you probably know this. The first thing I tweet out every single morning is work hard, have fun, be nice today. And it seems so simple and sounds so elementary, but it encompasses almost everything that I want to stand for as a teacher. When I started teaching, I wanted to work hard every day. I wanted to have fun every day. I wanted to be nice every day. And I wanted my kids to model those three things too in my classroom. So I wanted a classroom culture of working hard, having fun, and being nice. The other stuff was a given that would be teaching and learning. But so I taught for 18 years, and I taught first grade was my first job, moved up to fourth grade, moved up to middle school. Moved up to high school, stopped my teaching career teaching high school English, and then I moved into administration.
Yeah, and was there a specific event that occurred or a parent or another type of mentor that helped you create that phrase? Work hard, have fun, be nice, or where did that come from?
You know, that came from my first year as a principal in Georgia. I had moved from an assistant principal position in the district to a principal position, and I started doing the morning announcements simply because the principal before me did, and she had kind of left me a script she used, and I did that for about a week, and then I realized I didn't really like that script. I wanted to do my own thing, and so I did at that time we just did them over the intercom, although a lot of schools still do, and I started closing. I don't know. I just started saying work hard and have fun today. So the last thing I said every day on the announcements is, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you work hard and have fun today. And I did that for the first year. And then the second year, I remember I added be nice, but it just kind of came up, you know. And I remember one lady in particular, one of the teachers in my school, really thanking me for adding the be nice part to it. So started with work hard, have fun. And then the second year I said, be nice. And I always say that for 180 days a year, every single year that I was a principal, those were the last words the kids and teachers heard me say as I closed the morning announcements.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to start off every morning. In addition to that personal mantra that you've developed since your first year as a principal, how would you describe your leadership style and how did it get developed?
You know, I think everybody who's in a leadership position, and I include teachers in that, honestly, but I guess technically when you go into an administrative leadership role, you have to find what works for you. And I think any good leader does a huge amount of reading. Even in today's day and age, you're still reading. It may be different. It may be online. It may be blogs. But if you're passionate about being a leader, you're reading a lot of leadership books and a lot of leadership writings. And then from that, those readings, collective of all these people, you read all these leadership experts, you kind of over time develop your own leadership philosophy. Having said that, Daniel, I still go back to one of the very first leadership books I ever wrote. It's not necessary for education. It's called The Leadership Challenge by Jim Kouzis and Barry Posner. And These are two professors. I think one's at Stanford. I forget where the other is, and they've written about business. But they have five what they call exemplary leadership practices. And honestly, those are the five that I try to hold myself to as someone who practices these five things. And the five things are model the way, inspire a shared vision, challenge the process, enable others to act, and encourage the heart. I always say it's sort of an easy acronym if you remember. It's MICE with an extra E. But those five things, again, not written for education, I think those five things sort of say it all. And we could probably talk for hours about what kinds of specific things we can do on a day-in, day-out basis to model the way or to inspire a shared vision. But those five things are really the things I think make up my leadership philosophy, and I hope fairly consistently my leadership practices. We all get in times where we somehow veer off our path of what we believe in and hold fast to as leaders, but that would be mine, and I hope people around me would say that I live those pretty regularly.
So MICE with the extra E, I like that. Model, inspire, challenge, enable, and encourage. I know we don't want to talk about it all day. Most people are listening during a commute, and they're probably not driving from the East Coast to the West Coast. If they were, they would want you to speak about it all day, maybe 2 days. But for this purpose, do you have a story of when you modeled, inspired, challenged, enabled, or encouraged that can just share a little bit of insight of what it's like to be a high-level leader for the folks that listen to this show?
You know, as far as model the way, you know, you have to decide what's important to you as a principal or assistant principal or as a district office leader. You know, and for me, I always try to say that what's most important is what happens in the classrooms.
Right.
And it's more, a principal is hugely, hugely, hugely important. But it's not as important directly in terms of how the kids are going to do as that classroom teacher. So if I keep on saying that our core business is what happens in every classroom, I've got to model that belief that's important by being visible. And it's really a simple thing. It takes a conscientious effort. It probably causes me to work longer hours than others, perhaps. But if I insist that that's the most important place in our district, I need to model that by being in that most important place. So when I was a principal, I just made it a practice to be in every single classroom every day. And that may sound really great, but honestly, Daniel, some of those were step my foot in your room for 60 seconds and say hello. Sure. But I made it a practice, and it was a pretty big school. The last school I was principal at in Georgia was 1,000 kids, but I was in every room every day. And to me, that was sort of modeling the way that this is where it counts, this is where it all goes down, and this is what is most important. Nothing I could really do in my principal's office while kids were in the building was going to improve the school.
Right.
But if I was out and about in the classrooms and in the hallways and at the bus line, that was sort of modeling the way, showing others what was important to me. And talking about being in the hallways, you know, the more that I was out in the hallways and monitoring what was going on, the more teachers were willing to do that as well in between class changes. So I would say that's sort of a simple one. It does take time, but a simple one for model the way. If I threw one out for encourage the heart, I honestly am going to call myself out on this. I've slacked off lately, but for almost every year that I've been an administrator, one thing I try to do to encourage the heart is write two handwritten notes every morning when I come into work. And that can be to anybody in our district for any reason whatsoever, but just something, and it has to be authentic. I can't just, you know, make it up. It's got to be real. But, you know, like I do, there's certainly more than two I could write every day of authentic praise that I want to recognize in an old-fashioned way of a handwritten note. So that's another way that I try to encourage the heart and recognize people and know that I observe them when they're doing things that are good for our kids and our community. So that would be one for encourage and one for model.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that, Jeff. And you wouldn't believe how many leaders I speak to and people I really admire, such as yourself. You're like, I didn't know you're going to say that. But that's a practice that I've adopted in terms of writing a personal note. You know, you're kind of challenging me to two. Like I was thinking just one a day is good enough. In episode 15, I did an episode on gratitude, and that was the thank you challenge to all the listeners. So we might have to bump that up to two a day, but I really appreciate it. And the best thing that I can share from a personal example is that rarely does a time go by that when I write that note, that person doesn't physically come by and tell me how much it meant to them. And I don't do it for that. I don't do it for any accolade or for the reciprocity. I do it because that person has something in them that I, at a very deep level, respect and want to encourage to continue going. But it really, really touches their soul. So, Jeff, we talked about a lot of nice things. Let's hop into something a little bit tougher. What's been your worst leadership mistake, and what have you learned from it?
Now, here's one where we need the people driving across country from East Coast to West Coast, Daniel. So, gosh, the worst leadership mistake I ever made. You know, sometimes it's I'm going to go both extremes here. I've made mistakes where I thought you think you know everything, and you've been there, you've done that. And in school, so many things are cyclical. So you've already experienced this year one, then it happens again year two, year three, year four. And by the time it happens year five, you think it's the same thing. Whether it's a discipline problem with a child or perhaps a question about some underperformance in the classroom with a professional. And you think you know it because you've done it before, but what you fail to remember is that every single situation is unique, even if it's a similar concept. And so I've made mistakes where I probably jumped to conclusions without getting all of the facts of that individual situation. And overall, I don't think I do that often. I try to be someone who listens to all perspectives, but I do have a tendency to act and make decisions, and we are all busy, and so I try to get stuff done. And I think there have been times where I've made mistakes where I didn't treat this situation that seemed like another one that I had before as a brand new and unique one. And it's important that we do that, even if it's addressing underperformance with a teacher and you think you've been there, done that. Each one's unique. There may be reasons behind that. And it's so important. Or probably the best example, frankly, is when I was, you know, doing some student discipline issues as an administrator, you know, thinking I already knew what the kid had done because I'd read it on the discipline referral. But when the child came to my office, if I take the time to really listen, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be a consequence if the child did wrong, but it sheds a new light on it when you really take the time to listen to the child and find out everything that was going on. It's not always the way it appears on the written discipline referral. So I think I've jumped to conclusions at times and sometimes even acted already unfairly. But whenever that does happen, I'd like to think that I'm very capable about repairing relationships and acknowledging mistakes and the powerful words of saying, I am sorry, looking you in the eye and saying, I'm sorry that happened, and really meaning that goes miles to repairing those relationships and helping people to forgive me when I've made mistakes. There had been other times too, you know, to take the exact other extreme. I was just thinking of one small thing, a specific small instance where I've listened probably too much. I remember when I had three assistant principals at one school, and I felt strong in this one small issue that we should do A. The three of them all felt we should do B. And I really respected these three leaders, and they're still three good friends of mine. And probably because of that, I said, okay, let's do B. And I knew it was wrong, Daniel. Yeah. And in this case, I wasn't thinking it was wrong. I just knew it was wrong. And I did it anyway because I liked these people. I respected them, and I wanted to honor them. And they were outvoting me 3-1. So we went with that route, and it came back to bite us pretty hard as a mistake. And so I've remembered that one too, Daniel, that sometimes even if the majority of my friends who I respect are saying we should do this, if I know with 100% of every bit of my fiber that it's the wrong thing to do for kids, I've got to stand up and take that position if it's ultimately my decision to make.
So if I could summarize what I heard there, the antidote for listening, the antidote for jumping to conclusions and sometimes acting would be to listen and to get the full story, gather all that evidence. However, if you do that too far in the other extreme, you listen too much, the antidote for that would be to do a gut check to really identify, you know, what you feel the right decision is.
Yeah, it's really, yes, you stated it. aptly. And obviously, we all want to be collaborative leaders, and we all want to work together, especially when we have a leadership team. But at the end of the day, if you are the principal or if you are the superintendent, if you are ultimately making that decision, it gets down to, is it best for the kid? You know, typically, I'm talking about decisions that impact a child. You simply have to take a stand if you know in your heart of hearts that this is the right thing for children, even if you're the only one feeling that way. You've got to go with, you can't go against your heart and your core values when it comes to what's best for a kid.
Gotcha. Jeff, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
I think I came in and did a lot of things right, Daniel, but a lot of that right stuff I did happened because I had people who prepped me to do the right thing. We had an HR person in Forsyth County, Georgia, where I worked, Dr. Candace Norton, and she was fantastic, and she gave me some advice on the front end of that, and I just followed her advice, frankly, and a lot of that was my first summer before I was a principal, you know, calling in every single staff member. It's a pretty big staff, and meeting with them for 20 minutes. So she gave me a lot of good advice to prevent me from making a lot of missteps. There were other times where probably, you know, some advice she gave me, the same person who I respect a lot as a leader, she said, Jeff, do you want to, you know, rip the Band-Aid off all at once, or do you want to, you know, bleed by a million slow cuts? And I remember it was a decision on a program, whether we were going to cut this program or keep this program. And it's one that was a popular program, but it was one that we simply, for reasons too long to elaborate on here, couldn't keep any longer in that district. And I made a mistake there of not ripping the Band-Aid off all at once. Sometimes it's best, and young me didn't understand that because I wanted to make everybody happy, and closing that program would have made many people unhappy. So I guess, Daniel, maybe that's it, to tell novice principal Zoll that you can't make everyone happy. All of us who care about what we do and are passionate about our kids and our staff members, you want to make every one of them happy, but you can't please everybody. And if you do, in fact, you're probably counterproductive to that goal of pleasing a lot of people, because the very, very, very best people in your building, very, very best kids and very, very best teachers want you to hold accountable some who are maybe not pulling their weight or committed to the mission and the vision and the values of the school. So I guess the advice in a nutshell would be you can't please everybody and don't try to. That's counterproductive to the goals that you have as a leader and as a school.
Have you found any strategies, tips or tricks that have helped you rip the Band-Aid off or have those tough conversations with folks that aren't pulling their own weight? Because those, I mean, going into them, it could be a scary environment, you know, unsure of how things will play out, and people probably don't look forward to those conversations or making those choices. But, you know, how do you got to get past it as a leader. So what do you do?
Yeah, none of us do. I don't know anybody, any of the people I really like and respect who enjoy difficult conversations with a kid or a parent or a staff member. The difference between the good ones that I really respect and others is that the good ones I really respect do it anyway. None of us like it. To me, I think two things. So I think it kind of goes back to your mission, your vision, and your values. And if you, and some people just kind of blow that off. And there was a time in my career where I blew that off too and didn't care about mission statements. But that's probably because we had crummy mission statements. I really place a lot of stock in having a powerful mission, a vision, and value statements. And different people kind of define those differently. For me, a mission is, you know, why do we exist? And that's a pretty powerful question. And if you answer it properly, if that's what you believe a mission is, that's what I believe it is. It answers the question, why do we exist? Well, shoot, if we collaboratively, and that's what I want to build with the whole staff, right, or the whole district, you know, why do we exist? One ought to be able to come up with a pretty inspiring answer to that, and that should drive every single thing we do day in, day out. And then we should have a vision. What do we hope to become? Mm-hmm. I was looking at the Ron Clark Academy the other day outside of Atlanta where I visited years ago because I was suggesting a colleague go there, and I looked up the website, and his vision was to be the I'm probably saying this wrong, but it was something like to be the best school in the world.
Right.
Wow, that too is pretty darn inspiring. And then the most important one is that values to me. And to me, values is how must we behave on a daily basis to fulfill our mission and achieve our vision. And we came up with, we just came up with a random number of 5 value statements, but those statements start with the words, "We will." It wasn't about our parents. It wasn't about our kids. It was about us as a staff. What were we going to do to ensure the mission and vision? So if you create a powerful mission, vision, and you have these value statements, and the value statements answer, how must we behave, then it makes it easier for me, never fun, but easier to have a meeting with you, Daniel, and I'm going to couch it in one of those 3 things, if not all 3. You know, if it's a behavior you're not doing that we said we would do, you know, I can say, hey, Daniel, remember on these value statements, we didn't make these up unilaterally. I didn't make them up. We made them up collaboratively, and we all agreed that, you know, we would do this. And I've just got to look you in the eye and tell you, you're not doing that regularly. Mm. And so that, so I base those conversations often on mission, vision, and values. And then the other thing is just to be honest and direct and respectful. It tends to be well received, or as good as well received as it can be, if you're having a hard conversation with a child, a parent, or a teacher who's underperforming. When you're honest, respectful, and don't lie, just tell the truth and be honest and be specific. With me recently, it's been more parents who come in, it typically tends to be that their child didn't make, you know, the number one thing I get here, Dan, is their child didn't make the gifted program, or it's not really a gifted program, but the accelerated program. And again, I just have to, you know, stick to the facts and stick to the evidence and try to be consistent and let every parent know that I care about their child, but I can't go off the map for their child that I wouldn't do for another parent. So I've got to be really, really consistent.
Those last, I don't know if that was 5 minutes or what, but Better Leaders, Jeff just gave you a master class on mission, vision, and values and why they are so essential to your organization. And let's pause right here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by the book Reclaiming the Classroom by Trenton Goble. Have you ever looked around and wondered, how do we get to this crazy position that education currently finds itself? Well, the book Reclaiming the Classroom provides a roadmap for teachers to get back to a position of power and respect, and offers administrators advice on how to support and encourage their efforts. Listen, teachers are the single greatest source of innovation in the classroom, and real change can only happen through teacher-led initiatives. This book, Reclaiming the Classroom, offers a path for teachers to regain this position as the nation's experts on student learning and success. Pick up the book today at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. The Education Podcast Network podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. For more great education podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. And now, back to our show. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with this guy or not, Jeff, but Pat Lencioni wrote a great book called The Advantage. And anybody that wants to dig into a little bit more on how to develop an inspiring mission, vision, and set of values, I highly recommend that you check out that book.
Hey, Daniel, thank you. I'm a big fan of his work, but I haven't read The Advantage. So I read the first couple, Death by Meeting, and oh my goodness, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team.
But yeah, yeah.
So I'll have to read that. Thank you.
Yeah, and he's got some provocative titles too, like Getting Naked and The Power of Vulnerability. But Jeff, online, offline, I'll get your address. I'd like to send you that book. So that's on me, being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools.
Thank you, Daniel. That's mighty nice of you.
I'm really looking forward to how you're going to answer this question. What's one class we should add to all our schools nationwide, but Jeff, they're not currently in a school in our nation? So I don't want to hear about STEM, don't want to hear about coding, but can you think of a class we should add that we currently don't offer in our nation?
Oh, goodness gracious. Let's see. You know, let me think about that and answer. Let me start, though, by saying just the other day I was reading Seth Godin's manifesto.
Yeah.
It's a couple of years old now. Stop Stealing Dreams. What Are Schools For? Have you looked at that, Daniel?
I have, and he's a dream guest of mine. I don't know if we'll be able to, you know, discuss that manifesto, but yes, I have checked it out.
That's a great, great motivating piece for me. And of course, it's a free resource that we can all download. But the reason I bring that up is I'm so mad at myself I can't remember them. But somewhere in there that I read just a couple weeks ago, he has, you know, five courses we should be teaching in school that we don't. But if I came up with one that's not being taught anywhere, you know, it's hard to say because some of these classes are probably taught somewhere. But, you know, maybe a course called Learning How to Learn, maybe a course on curiosity, because curiosity is so important. I think Thomas Friedman said, no one works harder than a curious kid and the world is flat. He said that should be emblazoned above the doors of entryways to every school in our country to make our kids curious. So maybe a class on curiosity, a class on learning how to learn, a class on happiness, maybe. But again, these are probably taught somewhere, someplace, in some niches.
That's all right. I like those answers. That's good stuff. Jeff, what sets you apart from other leaders in education? What would you consider your secret sauce?
Oh, gosh. I don't. That suggests that I actually do set myself apart, or that anybody else would set myself apart from others. And I don't know that anywhere near where I want to be or near where some friends of mine that I respect a great deal are. What I try to do is outwork people, because there's a whole lot of people around me who are way smarter than I am. So when I say outwork people, I'm surrounded by hardworking people, but I tend to come early, stay late, never miss a day. I try to listen. I try to exhibit trustworthy traits and actions and behaviors. I try to treat people with dignity and respect 10 days out of 10, something that Todd Whitaker said way back when. Again, I fall short of these every single day, or at least every year as a leader, but these are things that I try to do. I try to, I close all my emails to teachers and to staff, to principals here with, I either end it with teach with passion, if I'm addressing all the teachers in the district, or I say lead with passion sometimes if I'm sending an email to the administrators in the district. So I hope that if at all something does set me apart, it's my passion, and that sometimes can, you know, any strength or, you know, positive attribute can come back to bite you in the tail if you overdo it too. And my passion has gotten the best of me, and where I've gotten overzealous maybe because I was so passionate about something I felt we needed to do, and I lost my way in terms of being a collaborative leader, keeping my patience and temper in check. But I think mostly that word passion, I would like to say, is something that maybe sets me apart, at least in what I try to do.
So let's draw out that idea a little bit of outworking and hard work, because that can, I'm sure, cause some conflict at home. So then how do you balance work life and family in a demanding job such as yours?
You know, it's easier now because my daughter, our one daughter, is a senior in college. So right now it's pretty much just me to go home to. But when she was in middle school, again, I've been blessed in so many ways, so many fortunate things. But the 3 years where I was probably going crazy with the work hours were her sixth, seventh, and eighth grade years of school. Luckily for me, I was named principal of her middle school the year that she entered that school. And so she really, really, really liked that the first year, and she kind of liked it a little bit less the seventh grade year and a little bit less still her eighth grade year. But I think secretly she liked it all 3 years. But that was just sort of a gift from God almost, in that I was able to spend some time with her and see her and check in on her during the day, because those were 3 years where I was working major, major hours, because in addition to being a principal, which kept me busy for 60 hours a week, I was getting my doctoral degree and writing books. But during those times, you know, I really focused on quality time outside of the workday, not quantity, because I just wasn't going to have the quantity I wanted then, nor do I now. So I try to be, I use the word intentional a lot, Daniel. I think great instructors are very intentional about every single thing they do. There's a reason for where they step, even. There's a reason for how they look. There's a reason for their pauses. There's a reason for pretending to be befuddled by a student question when they really know the answer. There's intention behind everything they do. And I don't think we're intentional enough sometimes with our free time, because as hard as I work, I still waste a lot of time at home. And so when I was finally forced to stop that because of my job, I became super intentional with my time, and I just made sure that, you know, I carved out, if I had an hour off, I was going to use that hour intentionally and do something of quality, whether it was with my daughter or with my family or even by myself, rather than just getting that habit of sitting on the couch and maybe turning on a TV. So not that many people do this, but one thing I stopped many, many years ago is watching any television shows. I do watch sports and news, but I haven't watched a television show since L.A. Law, and I think that was 1987 or something. I don't know when L.A. Law was on, but that was the last television show I ever watched. People don't believe I've never seen an episode of Seinfeld or Friends or anything like that, but I never have. And I was always afraid to. I'd like it maybe and keep watching it. So that's one thing I eliminated from my life, but there is never enough time. But we still, when we say that, we'd be surprised how much time we kind of just kill idly. So I try not to be too idle. I try to make the most of my free time like I do at school.
Gotcha. In the principalship and other school leadership positions, whether it's at the district or even as a teacher in the classroom, distractions are coming from everywhere. So do you have any tips or tricks for our listeners on how you stay focused at work? And you even mentioned, you know, being intentional with your free time. So how do you keep that focus? How do you avoid distractions in those different spaces?
You know, on the one hand, you know, you don't want to avoid all the distractions, because it's kind of, there's a balance there, right? I mean, there are some things that you, as a principal, that's like the last job in the world where you can plan out every minute of your day. That's just not going to happen. Too many things happen that you have to address. That, you know, a very angry parent comes in and wants to see you right now. Well, I have found it's better to see that parent right now. Even if they're really hot and bothered, it's just better to see them right now than to say I can't. So that's a distraction that I'm willing to take on, because I think it'll give me less distractions down the road. But for really, really important things that I just try to prioritize my schedule. I said before that the most important part of, you know, my day as a principal is being in classrooms. So I started every day by, you know, being in classrooms. I'd go walk the building, and there was always somebody who could find me if there was an emergency where I absolutely needed it. My secretary was just a master of knowing what those things were, but most of them weren't things that required me to come back to the office. So I started my day by doing that. And there's so many different ways to do that. You know, I've had friends do 5x5s. They go in 5 classrooms every day for 5 minutes. And if you did that every day, that's 25 classrooms in a week. So that's a good amount to do as a minimum. The other thing I did as a principal is, and I'm guilty of not doing this now, and I should. I'm going to start this in January, but I definitely did as a principal. If there was anything I was working on, Daniel, that I could do in a classroom, I took it to a classroom. And that was cool for a couple of different reasons. I mean, I would literally just sit down at a desk next to a couple kids, and they got used to this after a while, but at first they'd be looking at me because I wasn't paying really any attention to what was happening in the class. I was filling out forms back then. I was signing budget sheets. I was writing good news cards to kids or teachers. And so I was just working alongside them. So they could see me working. This is what I did. They could see me doing it in a classroom because I valued that classroom space. And now I think that it'd be easier rather than harder to do because it's all mobile now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I was a principal and, you know, a lot of my stuff I'm doing, maybe I'm doing emails. I can just take my computer down to a room and check 100 emails over in a 60-minute period while I'm sitting in a math class. My friend George Kouros, I don't know if you know George very well, no. But he just came out with a book called The Innovator's Mindset, and he is a district office leader in Canada, and he sort of challenged me with something he said in there. He says, as a district office person, he did that quite a bit. He scheduled times where he would be in a school with his computer and just hang out, and I need to do that in my current role too, and I'm not doing that. So I think it's one thing we can do as principals, though, to do our work in the classrooms.
Yeah, actually, is that the book you most recently wrote about on your blog?
Yeah, a really good book. And, you know, I'm biased. George is a friend of mine who I respect and have known for a while, but I think I'm pretty impartial when I say it's a book that is a must read for teachers and leaders. A really good, good book.
Okay, well, let's plug that real quick. You said The Innovator's Mindset, and why is it a must read for school leaders?
You know, and again, the blog I wrote, I pointed out seven things, but one thing that he said, and it's funny, I just saw him this weekend. He was in town. He's a big sports fan, so he was at the Bulls game Saturday night and the Bears game Sunday. And I told him if he ever comes to town again, he better do better. He lost both of those games. but I think one thing that caught my thinking that he wrote about was this idea of transformation versus innovation. And he said, if we're waiting to transform our classrooms or transform our schools, we're probably going to be waiting for a long time because that requires more than just me and more than just the seventh grade English teacher. My seventh grade English teacher can't transform the school tomorrow. That's bigger than she is. That's bigger than he is. But those two people can innovate tomorrow. And I just thought that was a subtle but important distinction. We can all innovate tomorrow. And I think as leaders, we sometimes use those two words interchangeably. I know that I always did until I read that book, and I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. I think there's a difference between innovating and transforming. Transforming is systemic, it's cultural, it's district-wide, and innovation can happen in a single classroom or in a single school or in a single leadership role. So that was one thing I liked a lot. Gosh, there was so much more, but a really good book I'd recommend.
Yeah, definitely. And Better Leaders, you know that all these great resources that Jeff is sharing with us will be in the show notes, all the books he talked about, and I'll also link up his blog, which is Teach, Learn, Lead, Repeat. So you can just hit the iTunes podcast start, show you the show notes, or visit the website, check out the show notes, and you can get all these resources. So Jeff, you've written a number of books. Which one would you like to share with our audience, and why should they check that book out?
If I talked about any of them, I would talk about the two that came out this year. So I had one in January, one in February, just because they're most recent and freshest, probably. What Connected Educators Do Differently. Yeah. I wrote with Todd Whitaker and Jimmy Casas, and that was just it really starts with our story, how three guys who are a little bit older than the average social media wizard, all of us are well over 40. I won't say how far over for some of us, but that wasn't second nature to us. We weren't digital natives. But when the three of us each kind of made that decision to start a PLN and get connected on Twitter and other social media avenues, as successful as we thought we already were, I think it made us that much better. It was just a powerful experience for each of the three of us. We were friends over time, and we just decided to write about that. And in that, we kind of give eight things that we call connectors. So the eight things that we have found, it's not a research book, it's a fun book, but the eight things that we have found among our PLN members that we think they have in common, generally speaking, that set them apart from other educators, because it is those educators who are going above and beyond, who are connecting at night. You know, it takes more time. It's not a time saver necessarily. There are some ways it will save you time, but the engaging with the PLN takes more time. And so that's a book I've been proud of, and I've been gratified with the feedback we've received so far. And then Tom Murray and I, Tom's a great friend and a great leader out in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. He works for the Alliance for Excellent Education. We wrote a book on leading professional learning that is a very thin book. It's part of the Corwin Connected Educators series. But it's a book that I still am proud of when I look back at it again that came out in January. But just a really thing I'm passionate about, how can we make – we talk about personalized learning a little bit more now for kids, right, but we don't talk about it enough for the adults. So we'll say to teachers, let's do this in your classroom. Let's really personalize the learning. But then we still tend to go to workshops where it's all sit and get. So Tom and I were trying to move away from that a little bit in our book.
Yeah, it's so strange how that is. And like one of the greatest ironies of education today that we do these individualized plans for students, but then the faculty just doesn't get our best. They get this one size fits all commonly, and we just need to break that cycle. So definitely check out Jeff's work, linked in the show notes. And I looked on Amazon, all 5-star reviews, I might add, to help out professional learning at your school.
I got my mom and some other relatives to write those reviews, so that helped out.
Yeah, big family. That's good. Jeff, what do you do for fun?
Oh, gosh. I run a little bit. I've had to cut back lately. I used to run marathons every year, and so I'm still running, though, but I haven't been able to run a marathon this year. This is the first year that I've run a marathon. I love long distance running. I kind of love it and hate it. I always hate it when I get up and go out and do it, but every time I finish, I love it. It feels so good. And the other thing that happens often on long runs is I get some good ideas. That's where some of my best ideas come. I really do just love to read and write and connect. I mean, I know that's still sort of a professional thing, but it gives me joy, and I enjoy doing that. So it's not work. Back in the day, I was an avid golfer. I've gotten away from that lately, but that's something I want to get back to. And probably my number one passion that's not work-related is travel. I really love to explore new places and the people that you see when you go to new places. So whenever I'm not working, I'm trying to hit the road somewhere. I love to travel.
Who is one person you'd love to meet, either present or past?
So let's see, past, I was sort of an English major, and taught high school English, and I was always going to be a novelist, Danny. It was my real goal in life. So I have, I guess, written books, but my novels that I wrote were a complete joke, and I've burned those. They were no good, and I realized I was never going to be a novelist. But I would love to go back in time and meet two of my favorite literary heroes, F. Scott Fitzgerald and Ernest Hemingway. When I was a kid growing up, those were the first two serious authors I read that I liked a lot. And so that might be one. Those might be two. Those two guys as writers that I liked a lot.
I knew I liked you. I'm a former English major as well, and Hemingway is one of my all-time favorite authors.
Cool.
Is there a tech resource that you leverage to be more effective at work?
I'm always trying to learn more things, but to me, it all goes back to Twitter, Daniel. That's the umbrella for everything else. Chances are, if I do learn of a new tech tool tomorrow, I'm going to learn of it from Twitter. And there's so many things out there, but they're almost a dime a dozen, from all the formative assessment things that seem to be the flavor of the day, Kahoot or Socrative, or, to the video conferencing things like we're doing right now, or Google Hangout. But it all starts with Twitter to me. That's the number one tech resource. I think the overlooked and obvious one is simply the internet. Our kids today, the reason I can say with a clean conscience to teachers about the need to change and innovate is it's just so factually sound that our kids can Google so much of what you and I learn, and then we've got to have some really hard honest conversations. Is it worth teaching, taking valuable time away from our face-to-face time with our kids to have them memorize stuff that they could look up? I mean, why should they have to memorize when you and I are going to look it up? So really the number one tool is the internet. That, the information is unbelievable. That's accessible at a flick of a switch, or flip of the finger on the device. So
we're wrapping up here with our last question. This is a big one. I prepped you for it in our pre-interview. But you are building a school from the ground up. You are not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you were given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
The first priority, if I had unlimited resources, would be the resources to attract the absolute best people, because it doesn't matter if it was 50 years ago or today or 50 years from now. And I do hope that 50 years from now, our schools do look dramatically different than they've tended to look for the last 100 plus years, Daniel, because they're not much different than when I went to school. But it would start with paying whatever I had to pay to get the very best teachers, administrators, coaches, counselors, you know, so for whatever role that I was going to have in that school, I would invest the first huge amount of money to getting rock star classroom teachers and school leaders and lunchroom workers and custodians. It's all about people. So I would start with people. I think facilities are underrated as an important part of teaching and learning. Even in our own district, we have adequate facilities, but mm-hmm. they're not what I'd want, really, if I could pick anything for my own child. I mentioned Ron Clark earlier today. I'd probably throw that out as a model. If anybody could ever go to Ron Clark's school, that could show you just how much of a difference facilities can make. And by facilities, I mean every part of it, but most importantly, you know, the classroom environment, you know, making it really engaging and inspiring and flexible learning spaces, and just having an unlimited amount of money to spend on really inviting, inspiring learning spaces, and frankly, you know, beautiful spaces, you know, with art and, you know, just everything would be a second thing. So I probably start with those are people and places, right? People and places, the right people and the right kind of learning places. A third thing, I think really in today's day and age, Daniel, the big thing, so if I said people's places and things, maybe that those are my three things, okay? People, places, and things. But then if I could pick the one thing I would want to have happen at my dream school, it would be personalization, both for the kids and the adults who worked in that school. And there's always going to be a place for whole group instruction, both for kids and faculty. It's still important, at least periodically, to get the whole staff together. But when they're learning, I would much rather have them learning things about which they are passionate and where they're at right now to get to the next level. Where you're at and where I'm at are probably two different places. And, you know, we need to take our professional learning for our teachers where they are and get them to the next step. Same thing with our kids. So I would like to create a school where the kids are learning at their own pace, you know, mastery learning. And that's not all technology. People hear that and think of technology. I just finished Sal Khan's book last night, The One World Schoolhouse. Had the chance to hear him at Northwestern a few weeks ago, and he gave us all a copy of that book. And to be honest, I just thought Sal Khan was kind of about the Khan Academy videos. You know, in reading his book, I realized he's about so much more. It's a small part of what he stands for. So, and he would be one who would really stand for a personalized education for our kids. So people, places, and personalized learning for all.
Jeff, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
You know, the best way to get a hold of me is on Twitter nowadays, and I'm at Jeff_Zoll. And advice, who am I to give advice? It's just I really commend anybody who's in this noble profession. It is a collection of people in general whose hearts are in the right place. There aren't a lot of slackers in our business, Daniel, as you know. We came into it because we love kids and we want to change the world. And just don't lose sight of why you came into it. And even those obstacles every day, remember your why. And your why is to be amazing and change the world. So that's what I'd say. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time you spent.
My pleasure. Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Jeff. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Jeff in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop right up where you'll get the highlights of today's shows, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. If you have an iPhone, tap on the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Jeff, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Daniel. Really appreciate it.
Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.